All right. Well, thank you for being here, Senator Begich.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
What's it like to be back in Ketchikan?
It's great. It's good to be back in Alaska. Good to be back in Ketchikan. I could tell the tourists are here because on the plane I could see. And also the folks coming for fishing, you could see him in the plane. It was actually when I took off from Seattle to get here, it was amazing to hear the conversation. It was a loud plane. Let me tell you, a lot of people talking about coming to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say about two-thirds of that plane was filled with visitors and people who are going to spend some money in our state, which is good.
I'm wondering, what is it? How do you stay informed about the issues in Southeast Alaska and in all of the different parts of Alaska when you're there in Washington, D.C.?
Well, first off, we have folks all throughout Alaska that are always helping us keep informed here. Bob Weinstein is here. He's former borough mayor, but he keeps city mayor. He wants to clarify that and make sure. Can I say the borough just because I felt like that when I was mayor? Bob, keeps our office here managed and works kind of the south part of Southeast. Then we have folks in Juneau that do the northern part. Then we have folks in Kenai and Anchorage and Fairbanks. And we have a rural coordinator that goes around the state. So we have a lot of Alaska staff that helps me keep in tune with the issues. But on top of that, I come back quite a bit. And so when I travel, it's a full schedule. It's usually, if I can find 4 hours or 5 hours of sleep in a day, that might be a miracle. But very busy getting out there to the people. I don't want to always have just meetings in an office. I try to go to events, try to engage with folks, town hall meetings. We have tele-town hall meetings from Washington, D.C. that I do quite a bit. Those are chances for people to give input. And when I do all that kind of activity, that's where I get a lot of information from what's going on the ground, but also people with new ideas and things they want to see done back in Washington or don't want to see done in Washington. But again, using the staff that I have here on the ground. And then to be honest with you, being born and raised in the state, lived here all my life, you got a pretty good sense of what's happening. And I keep in tune with all the news reports on just about everything going on. I attempt to.
And what do you plan on doing while you're in Ketchikan?
Well, a couple things. There's some stuff on the official side where I'm going to be going to the hospital and getting some updates on the Coast Guard dock being constructed here, meeting with individuals about some of the issues along with it be timber or mining. But also on the campaign side, we're opening up our office here, which we're very excited about. Again, meeting Ketchikan folks and just kind
does
of
does this have to do with the Democratic Party office opening?
Right,
in
that's
Ketchikan?
Where I'll be there. Yep,
okay.
That's today, and so I'll be down there.
So is that where your campaign will be operating?
It will be the coordinated campaign right out of there.
Okay,
yep. And that's a pretty strong statement. That's not that often. Last time when I ran in 08, that office was opened up in August. We're opening up a lot earlier. We think Ketchikan has an incredible group of voters here, and also a lot of good issues that we've been working on, and that we want to tell that story and also hear from constituents here about the issues they care about and what they think about this election. So it's a packed day, to say the least.
So state politics. the race itself, who's your competition? Who's your main competition?
That's going to be decided when the primaries occur. Third week in August will be the Republican primary. Mm-hmm. There's four candidates running. I think, depending on who you talk to, they all think they're in the lead, so we'll see how that all shakes out in the next 3 months or so. On top of that, you have three Libertarian candidates running, so that means they have to have a primary. Then there's two Alaska Independent Party folks running, they have to have a primary. And by the time we're done, the general election will have five candidates running. So I don't know who's going to be the main candidate over there. It feels like all they're doing is spending money beating on me, whoever they are. But we're going to, I'm going to continue to campaign on the issues that I have worked on. In Southeast, I can talk a lot about the work we've done with Niblack and Bocan Mines and Greens Creek and Kensington, making sure those operations are moving forward. Working with the Coast Guard, as we know here, a dock being constructed down here with hopefully when completed, we'll see two cutters there being stationed. I'll talk about the work that we have done throughout the state and working with the military, the VA, the veterans. Matter of fact, one of the issues we did here, because there's a, I got a letter and I remember it from the Chancellor. They developed a certification program for marine education so folks could learn some of the skills to work in the shipyard here, but a veteran was turned down, wasn't able to do it. because the VA said no. We came back on them very quickly. Now that program is certified for veterans, can get that skill over there in Southeast University and then come in the shipyard and work. So who knows what the who will be the candidate on the other side. What I'm going to concentrate on is talking about the issues that I care about, that over the last 5.5 years that Alaskans have talked to me about, that we've gotten results on, that we've gotten things done, and that's what I'll focus on. So who knows will be on the other side.
Sure. I mean, my question was just who's, not who are you with.
I take them all seriously.
Sure. It seems like the ads are focusing on Sullivan.
The ads that I've run, that I've paid for, I did a bio ad about, who I am, my family. I've talked about the Arctic and the development we were doing up there. Talked about the program we've implemented within our VA system to make sure that now people can get access anywhere in Alaska if you're a veteran through our Native hospital system. Those are the things that I've been talking about. Now, there are third-party groups fighting each other, I can tell you one thing. My opponents, all their ads have been attacking me. I know that. That's clear. Those poundings that I've been getting on every issue, and what's more amazing about these third-party groups, these ads they've run, every single one has been proven false by a third-party group, but yet they continue to run these ads. So I don't want to, the way we've been running our campaign is talking about the issues that I've been fighting for, that Alaskans care about, to assume or to make the statement that they're all on Sullivan is a mischaracterization of how we're running my campaign. Third-party groups are on their own. We have no ability to talk to them. We're not allowed to. But I've seen some very positive ads coming from people supporting us. I saw some mailers that the real estate industry sent out about us helping grow the economy. The American Petroleum Institute ran some very positive pieces on us about growing the economy and supporting the oil and gas industry. I saw some around the fishing industry. I don't know the name of the group, but they were positive on stuff that I've done and fighting frankenfish. So, but I will say that the Sullivan ads have been pounded on me without hesitation. Their third party, the Koch brothers, which are these guys who, closed down the Flint refinery up in Alaska, left dirty water for us to clean up. Even the governor's suing them. They continue to spend money beating on me on behalf of Dan Sullivan. So I.
Are the ads affecting your campaign at all?
People call and ask questions about certain issues that they bring up in the ads, and when we tell them the truth, I think it really clarifies a lot of those. But generally, my campaign is going to continue to focus on all the good work we've done over the last 5.5 years, getting results, getting things done for the state. When issues came to me, for example, on the VA, this whole national concern that people have on the VA, we saw that 4.5 years ago. We didn't wait around and twiddle our thumbs and make up bumper sticker slogans. We focused on it. We attacked it. It used to be there's 1,000 people waiting for the VA to get your primary care appointment, up to 120-day wait period. Today, that's down to about 24 people, 8-day wait period for your first primary care appointment. And on top of that, our partners how we did this is we forged an agreement with tribes around the state to open up their tribal clinics and hospitals for access for veterans, native or non-native. They have now another choice. So if they wanted to access, they could. And for example, I know in Anchorage, the two clinics there that are a hospital and clinic that's doing work with the veterans, when they're enrolled, you can get almost same day service for your healthcare needs for a veteran. We were having impact. We're actually a model of how to do it around the country. And I think this bill we will take up next week on the Senate floor on the VA. Alaska will be part of that equation. We're the right way to do this business. We have had audits, reviews, and we're not in the mix of the national problem because we saw this problem. I saw it. I remember agencies telling me that this can't be done. And we said, well, we're going to figure this out. And today we have one of the better delivery systems on your first appointment, your primary care, a doctor's appointment with the VA in the country. And it's because we went after it. We attacked it. That's what, when I'm out campaigning, that's what people want to know about. What have you done? How have you solved these problems that you talked about? National Petroleum Reserve is moving forward with oil and gas development. Or in Fairbanks, when I'm up there, we saved the F-16s from being moved out of there. Now they have a robust economy because of that. They have growth potential for their military. Or down here in Southeast, when we talk about the work with the mining industry. When I came in, Kensington was kind of the mine that had a little issue. We worked on that. Bocan, Niblack, worked with those folks to move forward. Greens Creek recently, and making sure they had an additional permit they needed. That's what I'm going to continue to talk about. My opponents like to talk about Obama all the time. And I don't know if they're running against Obama. I have no idea, but they should talk about what Alaskans care about. And that's what I'll continue to do.
Mm-hmm. What have been challenges for you representing Alaska in the Senate?
Obviously, travel is always the issue, you know, leaving, because the way the Senate operates, they finish off their votes on Thursdays usually. And so then I spend a day traveling, but then votes will occur on Monday. So you have a limited time when you come back home. And you have to be very careful with your time, allocate it properly, and then try to cover the whole state. I try to explain, like last weekend, I, you know, flew from D.C. to Seattle, get the Seattle flight up to Anchorage, Anchorage up to Bethel, then to Dillingham with a charter, then Dillingham up to a small village, and then, I mean, just constant movement you're doing. So you spend a lot of time in motion, in essence. And so when you get on the ground and having a chance to talk to people, sometimes people feel rushed because you have limited time, because, as you know, the way it works here, when the weather's changing, the plane is leaving, and you don't get really choices in that matter, in those issues. I think that's a huge challenge. But on the flip side, it is exciting to me when I get to go out to communities and hear firsthand what the issues are they're concerned about, and then also finding people who come up to me and say thank you for, and they, you know, fill in the blank. It might be someone who called our office and they couldn't get their Social Security check, or, you know, a mayor of a small town or village that says to me, look, we called your office, you helped us get this project done, we want to thank you for that. Or when I go up to the western part, I think it was in Kotzebue, where we saw this road that was all redone, and we're glad it was done, because without that road, they could have had some huge damage to their community because of flooding that occurred. And that road was done because of money we got allocated. Or when I go to Nome and see that beautiful hospital, you know, I supported, the only one in the delegation that supported what I consider the largest single earmark for Alaska in its history, $2.5 billion through the stimulus package. You know, when I look at that hospital serving now that whole region up there, beautiful hospital, knowing that I had a role in making that happen. Those are very exciting mm-hmm. to see these things.
So you've talked about some projects that you're proud of. What are some projects or initiatives that you feel like you still need to be working on that you haven't really gotten to tackle as much as you wanted to?
Well, I think one thing we're going to go after is more of a national, but definitely affects Alaskans significantly, and we'll take on this issue in about 2 weeks, and that's on the whole issue of student loans and the impact that's having on families now. It's the largest debt they carry. I used to chair the Student Loan Corporation here for 7 years. I have a very unique experience in that. I think it's important that we figure out how to lower this debt that's on families and individuals so they can afford to go to school. But also for individuals, like I met this one Alaska woman who talked about her job she has. She's wants to buy a home. She can afford it through the payment, but her debt ratio is too high because of student loan. So she can't buy the house she wants to get, her dream opportunity. So I think that's a big piece. I think we have a lot of work still to do. We've moved forward aggressively in moving the National Petroleum Reserve open for oil and gas development. I feel confident that that's going to happen by 2015. We'll see some production out of there. Arctic oil and gas development, again, moving forward. I think some areas that we're just starting to get the Senate aware of, and that's the what I call Arctic awareness. I chair a committee called Oceans, which deals with fisheries, Arctic, it deals with NOAA, Coast Guard. Getting more assets or resources for the Coast Guard to deal with the Arctic in the future. This means icebreakers, cutters, station up north that we'll need to have. I think there's still a lot of work to be done. Or, for example, I'm in the middle of the reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. As chair of the committee that has jurisdiction over that, we're taking input now. We're in the process of bringing that new piece of legislation forward. We're about to put down the reauthorization of the Coast Guard bill, which, again, for Alaska is huge. It's a national bill, but Alaska, it's very important. We'll have some Arctic provisions in there that will be critical for us as we move forward. So there's still a lot of work in a variety of areas. One area we haven't even really touched on much in the Senate, but it's an area of real strong passion for me, and that's the issue of education. What do we do about early education, career education? I've introduced legislation around this issue. These are long-term investments we need to make if we're smart about moving our economy forward, not only for Alaska, but for the country, and that's investment in education. I see it every day. This last year, I've been on the Appropriations Committee now almost a year and a half. We put more money in education than they have done in the last several years. Title I schools, special education schools, but also over $1 billion nationally for Head Start early education. So a lot of that, I think we're just starting to, literally just touch the opportunities there with education. Mm-hmm. So the problem is I can give you a laundry list of some things we've done, but also more to do because, you know, we're still a very new state in a lot of ways. I mean, we're not like some of these other states, been around for a long time. There's a lot of infrastructure need. Everywhere I go along the ports, states or the coastal communities is need for investment in our ports, just like we're doing here for the Coast Guard. $27 million investment because we need a better structure and better port for them to park their cutters at. So there's a lot of those kind of investments. So, every day there's new opportunities and excitement that I hope to bring to Washington and opportunities that we can advance Alaska in many ways.
So two items on the ballot are going to be appearing on the ballot with you in the fall. One is the legalization of the commercial sale of marijuana, and the other is the minimum wage item. Do you have any personal opinions on those two?
The minimum wage bill, I've already supported a bill back in Congress, which is a higher level at $10.10. This one's at $9.75. I think raising the minimum wage is not only good for individuals and their families, and actually, when you look at raising the minimum wage, it has a greater impact to women. They are the ones most affected by raising the minimum wage. So I think it's good for our economy. And as a small business person, I know some people will say, well, this is going to hurt business. I know the businesses that I operate, as well as my wife, we pay above minimum wage. This is a smart thing to do because, one, you should pay your employees a decent living wage. At the same time, the goal is when you pay them a little more, the retention level is higher. On top of that, what do you think they do with that money? They put it back in the economy. They're buying goods. They're spending money. And that's a positive thing for our overall economy. So from a national end, we had a bill up. It failed by a couple votes. Maybe we'll bring it back, we hope. But in the meantime, Alaska is moving forward, as we always have done, on these wage issues. That's why we're 50 cents higher than the national minimum wage right now in this situation. I'm anticipating that it will get, it's on the November ballot and that it will be approved. And I've already been on the record supporting minimum wage. On the marijuana issue, I have an 11-year-old son. I have no interest in him sampling marijuana or any other types of drugs. But the voters will make a decision, as they have done in the past on this issue. We have medical marijuana, personal use in our state. The voters will vote on this issue, and however the voters move forward on it. The big challenge I'll have on the national level will be, making sure the federal government, the state makes the decision, that the federal government doesn't interfere in that decision. And that's a big challenge right now. Because as you know, in Colorado and Washington, this is, how they do their banking, for example, for that commercial operation. Or when people are impaired, how do you measure that if they're driving vehicles like we can do with alcohol? We can very quickly measure your alcohol content and know that you exceeded a certain limit and therefore you were impaired in your driving. This will be future issues we're going to have to deal with. And so, I'll wait till the voters make their call. And then if they vote in favor of it, there will be actions we'll have to look at from a federal end to protect the state's rights in this area.
Would you vote for it?
We'll see.
How do you feel about the decision you made in supporting the Affordable Care Act?
Well, it's interesting being right here in Southeast. This is when I campaigned 6 years ago, this is where I heard for fishermen that came to me and said, we can't get health care. We can't get health care coverage because of our work, our risk, all the work we're doing, or in some cases, some had pre-existing conditions. In Alaska, 34% of Alaskans who went to get individual policies were denied health care coverage. Today, none get denied. Is it a perfect bill? No. Are there things that we need to do to fix it? Absolutely. And I propose several things. For example, the Copper Plan, which is a lower premium plan, more catastrophic, still has prevention in there. Or with small businesses that are 50 and under. They are not required to provide health care. But if you want them to require health care, you want to make sure there's some good tax incentives. I proposed a package of tax incentives that I think would be very beneficial to them. At the same time, when I've seen things wrong with the law, and actually right here in Ketchikan, I remember the town hall meeting. It was a gentleman who stood up. You asked me earlier how I get information or how I keep in touch. At a town hall meeting here, a gentleman stood up in the back of the room and said, did you know there's this provision in the Affordable Care Act called the 1099? The 1099 requires small businesses to add more paperwork to their efforts, file it with the IRS, and he explained it to me, and I said, you know, we need to get rid of that. And I worked with Republicans across the aisle, and we ended up, after several votes, getting rid of that burdensome paperwork. It was a bipartisan effort with Democrats and Republicans working together. Or another one recently occurred. For example, if you were a victim of domestic violence and you wanted to go on the exchange to get health care for yourself, you still were subject to your spouse's income, which in this case was very problematic. If you were separated from that individual because of the domestic violence, or you were a victim of domestic violence, so we fixed that to ensure that they could get their own health care separate from their spouses. Or volunteer firefighters that were going to be subjected to the health care law, they are separated out, and they are not subjected to the law. So it's not a perfect law. There's fixes we need to make. And at the same time, we can't go back to the days when 34% of Alaskans were denied who wanted to get individual policies. So it's not perfect, but we need to continue to work to fix it.
So, I mean, given the, you talk about the problems that Alaska was facing a few years ago and the current national problems with the VA, I mean, wait lists have killed soldiers. Is the VA still the best system to get health care for veterans?
I think it was interesting. I'm a member of the Veterans Committee, and we had all the national organizations, you know, Veterans of Foreign War, American Legion, you know, so forth, all lined up. And when that question was asked, and that was actually a question that we asked, every single one of them said, it's very good care. The challenge is access. And if you heard them say that, that's what they repeated over and over again. We saw that problem again in Alaska. Access was the issue. How do you create better access and be innovative with other resources that are out there? And today, again, if you're a veteran in Alaska, that Nome Hospital I described, there's 800 veterans that live there, native and non-native. They can now walk across the street, use that hospital, get the service, and the VA will reimburse the clinic, and they won't have to fly to Anchorage or Seattle. That's a huge advantage that we have developed here. And so I think the challenges around the country are appalling. And I think people who have caused issues with the waiting list, committed fraud of any kind, need to be held accountable and need to be prosecuted. But we also need to fix the system. And I know there's a lot of bumper stickers going on now because people like to say, you know, first, last week was fire the secretary. You know, so, okay, that was done. Now what? You can fire all the people you want, but you actually have to fix the system. Alaska has shown how to do this. And the example, most recent example I got was in Bethel. So I was up there last week, and I go to the VFW hall. There's a half a dozen or so veterans there, and this gentleman looks at me and says, you know, you told us 2 years ago, Mark, you were working on this idea to get health care so as a veteran I can get it right here in my community. I'm thinking he's not happy, you know, because he's the way his tone is. And then he puts out his hand, and he's all scarred up, and he says, I had to go to Anchorage to get this taken care of. And I'm now realizing, okay, it's maybe not working here in Bethel. Then he says, but you know what? My therapy I have to have every 2 weeks. I get it down the street right here in Bethel. I don't have to go to Anchorage anymore. It works. What you told us 2 years ago is actually working. And oh, by the way, that means they don't have to pay for airfare, which means the airfare money goes back into the pool for health care for veterans. He was telling me this story, which was an incredible story. And then he whispers to me, says, you know, I'm a staunch Republican, but I still like this program. And I said, I don't know what that means. I'm glad it's working. And he says, no, I think you've done a great job on this. That is a model of how to do this. And I think nationally, what I'm worried most about right now is we run to a crisis. That's what happens in Washington, D.C. We didn't do that here. I saw this problem in 2009. We took it on, got results. Today we see the benefits of it for our veterans in Alaska. It doesn't mean it's perfect. We have more work to do on our veterans programs here. But just the fact we were able to do that shows it can be done. You know, and so next week when we have this bill in front of us, which is what we'll be dealing with next week, you'll hear a lot from me about this. And I think Alaska, I spoke on the floor on Tuesday, Alaska is the example. I mean, we're so remote, the logistics, the cost of delivery, we're able
to
do it.
What kind of feedback did you get from that presentation?
Well, now, you know, I have people coming up, you know, from Colorado, a senator from Colorado. So how'd you do that? How'd you make that happen? I've been trying to do this. I said, I don't know how you've been trying to do it, but here's what we did. I had another one from Oregon say, well, explain how you make that work with community clinics, because we use Anchorage Neighborhood Health Clinic in Anchorage also. And they're not a native clinic. They're a community clinic, federally funded. And I explained how that works. And so what has happened is we're getting now people paying attention. I spoke to folks in the White House about this. I just spoke to the new nominee as the Office of Management and Budget, who has a lot of control over some of these issues, said, here's some things we did. Here's some things that if we tweak a little bit more, we could have impact. So I think they're now looking at what we're doing up here. I know the Veterans Administration is looking at what we call the NUCA model, which is for the Alaska Native Hospital System and clinics. They're now looking at how to implement that in certain areas because they see the value of this. We deliver better care. We cut down on the emergency room delivery costs. We have more same-day service than anywhere in the nation when it comes to this kind of care delivery system. I mean, it is really an incredible model. I mean, think about this. For the right now in Anchorage, and I use Anchorage because I just had a meeting with them last week, with South Central Foundation and the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Clinic, those two combined, those are the two groups that are working in the Anchorage region with the VA, they're averaging 40 to 80 people a week being signed up from the VA. They, at this point, once you're signed up with their organization, the odds of getting same-day service, you walk in, you got an ailment, they'll take care of you right then. That's unbelievable. And so, but we're using the federal-funded network. In other words, the VA is paid by the federal government, Indian Health Services is paid, or the tribal consortiums are paid by the federal government, and a big chunk of the clinics, these regional clinics, are paid by the federal government. So why not use those resources, deliver better care? So, you know, I know some people are out there kind of barking about, you know, writing bumper stickers and this and that, but this is about real results that we've got. And veterans are getting good care. I mean, that one in Bethel was amazing because I wasn't sure where he was going with his story. And when he was done, he was very excited about this new program. Mm-hmm. So that's why when I spoke on the floor, we used some examples. And again, it's very different. 5 years ago, people told me it couldn't be done. I have a memo on my desk that says can't be done. And I said, okay, we're going to put that right there and we're going to work double time.
What about ways in which federal policy seems to conflict with the unique situations that Alaskans are in? One example here, the Healthy and Hunger-Free Kids Act requires certain policies, certain practices to be implemented in the schools. For example, not selling certain kinds of concessions that don't meet certain standards during the school day.
Yeah.
And it conflicts with sports teams and other teams that travel a lot here. That's how they raise a lot of their funds.
Right.
What do you think about that issue?
Well, there's a couple things. And I remember my days as mayor, now as U.S. Senator. Alaska does have one of the higher percentages of obesity, and it adds to healthcare costs, adds cost to families. It's an incredible additional cost. One of the things, and this has been a challenge, not only for Alaska, but around the country, a lot of those concessions or vending machines and so forth raise money for extracurricular activity. So we have to recognize that some of the food products in there are not healthy, and we have to deal with that, especially when federal money goes into these schools. Now, on top of that, I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago in the Appropriations Committee, you know, we had a debate, if you can believe this, over potatoes. Through the Agriculture Appropriations Committee, red potatoes, white potatoes. And so we had this debate. I'm thinking, what are we debating here? And while they didn't want white potatoes to be included in the WIC program, which is Women, Infant, and Children program, or any kind of federal funded program, and because it's not as healthy as the red potato. I said, that's great, for maybe a state that you can get access to all that. But I live in a state that, first off, I grew up on white potatoes, and I tell you all kinds of stories of everything we made with them. But in Alaska, maybe in southeast or rural parts of the western part of Alaska, it's easier to get white potatoes than red potatoes. And why would you exclude in very unique situations? It was the most amazing debate. I'm thinking, okay, we're working on a multi-billion-dollar budget, and we're debating a product that I grew up on that I know some people want to have a much healthier food product. You know, that's great, except you can't get it, and it's more expensive. And I would love red potatoes, but it costs more and harder to get. So we were able to stop and allow white potatoes to be part of the WIC program now, which was not the case. And I raised my hand, even though the Democratic chair was against this position. He said, no, we got to get rid of those. Those are bad. I said, no, you're wrong. I live in a rural state. We got to fix this problem. Same thing on some issues with whole grain products. I would love whole grain is much healthier, no question about that. But again, you can't get it everywhere, especially in a rural state like Alaska. So I think we have to constantly remind folks of the uniqueness of Alaska and our capacity to have certain types of food products or goods or whatever it might be. You know, just like we did on another bill, the WERDA bill, this is the Water Resources Bill. All our ports were always competing with money against Seattle or Long Beach. Well, we'd never win. You know, we never get the kind of money we deserve. So now there's a set aside for rural Alaska, for ports, boat harbors. So everything we have to look at and everything that comes in front of me, I'm constantly, how does this affect Alaska? And it was funny because I don't think they expected me at the Appropriations Committee to actually debate these potato issues. And honestly, I didn't think I'd be in this debate either. But I thought they don't understand what we use in rural Alaska. Now, it'd be great if they were available, but they're not red potatoes as easily. They're more expensive. They're harder to get. And the reality is we got to make sure people have food as the first priority. In the case of the schools, one of the issues there is trying to streamline some of the products that are just, they're just not healthy. And they do impact some of our extracurricular activities. But the Anchorage School District, I know, did it many years ago through some work we did to get rid of some of that. And they've readjusted, but it is tough. But we have to figure out, with an obesity rate one of the highest in the nation, what are we going to do to combat this issue and how to live a healthier lifestyle? Because at the end of the day, we're all picking up the bill for unhealthy lifestyle. And you know, I'm not saying I live the most healthy lifestyle, but I try. Less bad stuff, it means a healthier person, less cost, and less healthcare costs.
Mm-hmm. You know, with the Forest Service facing the budget issues that it's going through right now, especially in recreation, there's been a little more traction to this idea that the state should take over about 2 million acres of the Forest Service to offer for timber sales. Is that a reasonable proposition?
Well, I know we've been working with the Big Thorn sale, and we're getting closer and closer. It seems like we're finishing some of the studies that are necessary, and I think July or end of July we'll have hopefully good news on that fact. I think the challenge is, as you know, in Southeast is coming up with a long-term plan, and this is something we continually hammer the Forest Service on, that they need to come up with a long-term plan that recognizes several aspects. One is our timber industry, recognizes our recreational and our fishing, kind of these three, and how they impact the overall communities. This is when you asked earlier about what are those things I want to kind of continue to get done. This is one, because what you don't want to have is decades more of fights over the Tongass. What you want to do is have a good, solid plan that deals with the timber harvesting, deals with recreation, and then deals with the whole issue of how it impacts or not impacts fisheries. So that's kind of one of the bigger targets. Having the state take it over, you know, it's interesting. At some points, like we were having some discussion on an amendment that's in a bill right now on appropriations on regarding Department of Transportation. Sometimes just giving the state authority doesn't mean that they're going to represent the local issues. Sometimes we find that the state has their own agenda that is not very respective of the local communities. So I would be cautious, but the bottom line is we need more timber out there for especially our operators that are operating right now in the timber harvesting business.
Okay, well, last question was the Chinese ban on gooey ducks from Washington and Alaska. It, the way that developed, I mean, there was a ban on USA gooey ducks for much longer than there was a ban on British on the gooey ducks from British Columbia.
Yeah.
It seems like it took a long time to get the ball rolling, to get people over to China to start communicating with them, to get that open. The specific amount of time of the ban escapes me, but it was pretty significant, and it affected a lot of local divers. How do you respond better in the future?
Well, I think, you know, I don't want to say that we didn't respond quick enough. I think there's other issues going on with China that are not just about this single issue with the U.S. I think China has a lot of issues on the table that they leverage more often than not Alaska as their leverage point. Let me give you an example. When we wanted the Chinese ambassador to come to Anchorage to speak at a group, we're the only state that he had to go get a visa from to come into Alaska, even though he was coming from Washington, D.C. Made no sense. It was the craziest thing. It was because we were caught in another issue with Tibet and the folks there. And so we were caught in this national, international triangle. Had nothing to do with Alaska, but we were the pawn in the game. I think in a lot of cases, China utilizes us more often than not in their political desires on other fronts. So that's one thing we can never really totally overcome. But on top of that, I would just say this, that whenever we get a ban like that, we have to be front and center, aggressive. We have to use the Secretary of Commerce as an example, who works with our fisheries industry and our trade people, to be aggressive. And you can, you know, I think once we saw it, we jumped on it. But we were in some other issues that were going on that I think we were caught in the middle of. And that, unfortunately, is what happens with some of these international issues. What we have to do is make sure that Alaska is not in the triangle anymore. Actually, the thing with the Chinese ambassador we fixed. So that's no longer necessary.
What do you mean in the triangle?
Well, between international, sometimes when the U.S. and China are having conflicts in other areas, Alaska kind of gets thrown out there as, well, let's just do this over here. Maybe that's how we solve this problem. Or in this case, China. You know, why Canada got to go faster than us on this issue, there's no logical sense to that, but I think there's a lot more international political activity going on there.